So, they used to call my grandfather this, but they're not connected. Mr. Biggs is coming up today to talk olives. They used to call him that. All right, he was playing lottery before there was actually a lottery, but that's another story for another day. It's great to have Doug back from the West Coast. We'll hear all about that. Sand between his toes, getting caught up with his beautiful son. Also, we give you the opportunity twice to win some incredible gift certificates every hour. Janoski's in a little bit, but right now out in Wexford, it's Sorgel's. 10th caller wins it, 412-922-1020. And we'll talk olives, but we want to talk gardening. As I alluded, fall planting season fast approaching and the weather is cooperating. So 866-391-1020. Doug, welcome back and good morning.
Thanks so much. Later on, we'll be talking to Steve Biggs, Mr. Biggs, about growing olives where you think you can't. Steve's a good friend of mine from Toronto, and this book is pretty cool. So while I was in California, something happened, Rob.
What happened? It rained.
No, I heard it rained here, but I had a post go viral.
Nice. What was it?
So all our friends here, our audience here, and all our nice, friendly garden folks have heard the story of the Limbaugh Legacy potato top tomato.
Yeah.
One I've been giving away the seeds for 25 years. Well, early in the morning on my vacation, I got a call from Randy Sorgel saying, "What did you do?" I said, "I didn't do anything. It just, I wrote this little recapping what I have done with the Limbaugh Legacy. Ray Petland
put Channel
it,
two.
Yeah, put it out there. And then from there, it just took off with, I don't know how many comments, 1,000 comments and 600 shares. And everybody and their brother came out of the woodwork.
Way to go.
Well, no.
Why?
Not way to go. You probably have to deal with this because you have to, you know, you talk about the news of the day and everything. But as I said, I've got this little community of wonderful gardeners here, and we're all trying to help each other. But when it went viral, these people are just like typing in caps, saying that's not the Limbaugh Legacy. That's one called Brandywine. People saying, not reading the post and saying, how do I get seeds? I must have 150 times put something in there. Here's how you get the seeds. Here's how you get the seeds. Poor Randy Sorgel. All I put in there was like, every year Sorgel's helps me plant, grows the plants, and we give them away at the plant swap. That's all they do with the plant. They're being nice and helping me. Well, he's getting calls from Missouri and all over the world, basically. I had people from Australia who want the seeds.
Hello, mate.
Germany. Yeah, you can't do a German accent?
Yeah, I can.
No, yeah, you don't want to. Okay. Yes, it's wonderful to get the word out on this beautiful tomato.
Right.
But I got a taste of what the real internet is like.
When it goes viral, it's a strange
people
thing.
People start arguing about a tomato in the comments.
Listen, I just had one recently. I was interviewing a friend in Ohio about the legacy of her father, and I clicked on it, and there's like 50,000 views. And that it's just strange how this happens.
Yeah, I don't know how it happens. Like I've written about this tomato many, many times, and over the years, you know, when newspapers were a big deal,
they still are to me.
Yeah, they are, but they're not like not as many people see them. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I loved the newspaper industry. I loved being part of it. But when it was at its peak and everybody saw it, yeah, it was a big deal. So anyway, Randy and I were talking. We were laughing about it, and he reminded me that his son Pete works up at this really cool winery called Linmar Estates, a little bit north of San Francisco. And my son lives south of San Francisco in Palo Alto, so we thought we'd go up there and check it out. And on the way up, hiked through the redwoods, which was really cool. But oh man. We got the tour of the century of this beautiful winery, and the gardens were just unbelievable. In fact, Pete Sorgel just said to me, he goes, "Well, now that I have the garden guy here, I want some suggestions for the garden." And at first I said, "Well, don't you have another gardening expert in your dad?" And I didn't have one suggestion for the gardens. They were that beautiful and just wonderful. And learning how they make the wine and then
drinking the wine.
Oh, wine tasting was okay. And so we
How's your son doing?
He's doing great. We had a ball. We hiked every day, and we hiked up to this thing called the Stanford Dish. It's this giant satellite dish. It's basically, this hike just about killed me.
Yeah, I was going to say, that takes a bit of an effort.
Yes, it was quite an effort. That was our last day of hiking, and by that time I was worn out. But
Could you live out there?
I don't know. It's expensive. It's expensive. It's dry. It's different.
Be hard to garden out there?
No. No? As long as you could put water on your stuff, you'd be happy. That was the thing with Pete Sorgo at Linmar Estates. That's the one thing is the water. He was telling me it rains in the winter, and then it just stops. There's no rain. And speaking of rain, I guess we got some here, but not enough. Not nearly enough here. It has opened a planting window. As Rob said, fall planting, this is the time. But out in the nurseries, take a look at, see what kind of cool weather crops are out there that we could put in. Now, if something's coming out in your garden, this is that third part of the season that I love to talk about. I love planting in the fall, you know. We're talking bulbs, perennials, shrubs, trees. But the vegetables, too, the cool weather vegetables. Oh, we do have a call. You want to grab a call early on before we go to our guest?
Yeah, we can do that. Let's say hi to Jeff in Pittsburgh. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
What's on your mind, Jeff?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, so I've two questions. I've got a couple different dogwoods that were planted in the wrong place in the yard. And they're not getting the sunlight like they need. So I need to know, is it possible to move a mature dogwood? They're still only maybe 15 feet tall. They're tiny. And they haven't grown much because of the shade. And number two, creeping thyme. You know, you see that all over the internet. Does it grow around here? If so, do you need a special type that grows in our zone?
Good questions. Let's talk about the dogwood. Now, are these dogwoods just our native dogwood that, you know, your normal native dogwood?
Yeah, one's a Japanese
dogwood. So one's the Kusa. That one does need a little bit more sun. What's the other one?
You know, I noted in my plant ID app, so okay. I'm opening it right now.
Okay. So if it's a native dogwood, then it does stay in the shade. If it's a Kusa dogwood, it needs a little bit more sun. And yes, you can move them at that size. But how thick is the trunk? Would you say just guesstimate?
In diameter?
Yeah, under an inch across.
Probably 3, maybe 4 inches. If that.
Oh, okay, that's pretty big size. You're going to have to think about what you're going to do there. With a native dogwood, I had a woman tell me once, she ran a nursery, and I said, when's the best time to move a native dogwood? She says, never. So
I've heard that.
that 3 inches, that's pretty big. You might consider having a pro take a look at it first. You know, as we often talk here, you know, Davey Tree is part of the show, and I trust them, but any certified arborist could take a look at that for free and give you a suggestion. Like, you can ask him, can I do it myself? Could I dig that size tree and move it safely? Or should somebody come in that has more equipment to be able to do it? Because they
like with a spade.
Yeah. Even doing it by hand, but with somebody who is experienced,
knows what they're
doing, experienced at doing it. Because that's a pretty big sized tree as far as the diameter of the trunk. I would be worried.
Okay.
This is the time to do it. I would wait until I'd probably wait till next week, actually. I did see the weather here that we're getting to the 80s. You want a nice, cool, rainy day if you can do it. And, of course, lots of water until the ground freezes. But my recommendation would have a pro look at it. As far as the creeping thyme goes, yes, creeping thyme grows here. It's a wonderful plant that's perennial, comes back on its own. As far as I know, most of the creeping thymes are hardy for our area. And so there are a lot of different types of creeping thyme. Did you know how you wanted to use it? Like where you were going to plant it?
Short slopes that I don't really want to cut anymore. You know, maybe 2 or 3 feet.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Tall and right around the we've got a telephone pole right where the mailbox in the corner of the driveway is. So I don't know if I'm going to do some wildflowers there or do some creeping thyme, and also maybe in between some walking stones.
That's a perfect place for it. Thanks so much for your call. Appreciate it. Coming up next, Steve Biggs.
Mr. Biggs around the corner. Stay with us.
Mr. Biggs.
It's 866-391-1020 if you'd like to chime in a little bit later to talk everything that is gardening. Doug Oster, DougOster.com.
I'm joined this morning by my friend Steve Biggs, and he has a brand new book that I'm excited about called Grow Olives Where You Think You Can't. He has also written Grow Figs Where You Think You Can't, Grow Lemons Where You Think You Can't, and Grow Figs in Cold Climates, 150 of your questions answered. So, olives, Steve, how did this come about?
Well, hey, Doug, you know, I just love pushing the boundaries and trying to grow what I'm not supposed to grow. So along with the citrus trees and fig trees in the yard, I've had a couple olive trees for about 20 years. And it took a little while for me to figure out what to do to get a good olive crop. And once I did, I thought I gotta share this, because an olive tree is just, it's the most beautiful tree. Those leaves, they're silvery gray and they kind of dance and shimmer when you get a breeze. They're like the perfect patio plant for a northern garden.
Why do you think people would want to grow olives?
Well, I think because they're beautiful. A lot of people like to geek out on exotic crops like me. So that's another reason. But there's also that whole cultural side. So many people have Mediterranean family roots, or they've been to the Mediterranean. And so it's nice just to have a little bit of the Mediterranean in your garden.
Well, I'm intrigued because I'm Italian through marriage, and where my wife's cousin lives in Italy, we walked through his olive orchard, and I've always fantasized about going there for harvest time. But when we're growing them in the north, what do we have to do? First off, do you always have to get olives from it? Can you just grow it as an ornamental?
Absolutely. It's a great ornamental. And so say if you didn't like olives, you can grow it just as an ornamental. And but if you want to get olives, there's a couple other things you have to do, and I'll tell you about that in a minute.
Yeah, that's what I'm interested in too. If I'm going to grow an olive tree, which since you've helped me so much with figs, we're going to do olives next. I'm going to be picking at least 100 figs this year because of you. And it's going to be my best harvest. But I'm really, after I saw the book, I really want to try olives too. So in the book, they're in containers, right? Is that the way that we should be growing them?
Yeah. For you and me, we're growing them in containers. And sometimes when you get those borderline areas like Pacific Northwest, they might be able to grow olives a little bit beyond where you think. But for you and me, they're in containers. What you want to know is that some olive varieties will give you olives just with one tree. They can self-pollinate. Other varieties, you need two different trees. So what you want to do, if you're just going out to shop for an olive, look for a variety that, you'll see the term sometimes self-fertile or self-fruitful, and that's what you want. And there's a few varieties that are. Frantoio is one that I see for sale around here. It's a good one, but there's other ones too.
So preferred to buy self-fertile instead of the two trees that it needs pollination with two trees. Is that right?
Yeah. So if you only have space for one tree, make sure you get a self-fertile one. That's the key point.
How big is the container?
So the container really depends on you. It's, you know, think about bonsai, where you can get a tree that's a century old in a little container because it's been pruned. The roots and shoots are pruned. So the same applies to your olives. Ultimately, the gardener picks the size. But of course, the bigger it is, the more olives you might get. So for my trees, I've got them about 6 feet high. and I have them in 14-inch containers. Now, you could go bigger than that too. It's just that, you know, the bigger it gets, then you got to think about that come fall when you're trying to haul it into your storage space for the winter.
As I read in the book, the olive tree needs that cold period to put on olives, right?
Exactly.
So where do we put that olive tree that it's going to be doing what it needs to do during the winter?
Yeah, so there's different options, and it'll really depend what kind of setup you have at home. For years, I kept my olives in my garage because my garage gets down to just around the freezing mark. Now I have a cold greenhouse that I keep just around the freezing mark, and that's perfect. So you don't need a hot tropical greenhouse to keep your olive through the winter. And you do actually need to give it some cool weather for it to make flowers for you. So each variety is different in terms of how much time you need to give it cool, but at least a couple of weeks as a good general rule.
Two questions. How cold can it get? And does your wife resent you for not being able to park in the garage?
Yeah, I'll answer the second one first. She's come to accept me, then she knows that the car will never, ever go in the garage because I'm always getting more plants. I would say, you know, so if you're growing an olive in the ground somewhere that's, you know, where that's possible, they can go down to, you know, maybe 14, 15 Fahrenheit sometimes. You know, hardiness is never an exact thing. But if you're growing it in a pot, I'd keep it just around the freezing mark. You could probably go down to, you know, 23 Fahrenheit, but, you know, you're going to all the trouble to grow this thing. So I'd say don't risk it. Play it safe. I keep mine over the winter around 36 Fahrenheit just to be safe.
So what do we do once we get our olives? Because I know you can't eat them right off the tree.
So usually you puncture the skin somehow, and some people use a fork or they slit it with a knife or maybe they crush it with a mallet. And then once you've done that, there's a few different ways you can do this, but I soak them in water for a few days, change the water every day, and that helps pull out some of those compounds. And then after about a week or so, I put it into a brine, a salt water solution. And I keep it in there for at least a month and then go ahead and marinate it and put in all sorts of beautiful stuff like rosemary and garlic and chili peppers and make your own homegrown marinated olives.
What's the best way for people to get a copy of the book?
The book is on Amazon. That's the easiest and fastest way to get a copy. And it's called Grow Olives Where You Think You Can't.
Steve Biggs is going to join us again next month to talk about one of our favorite things to talk about figs, what to do with your fig tree, how to harvest figs. He has helped me, as I said, this year, if all goes well, Steve, it's going to be at least 100 figs.
And, fantastic.
I'm so indebted to you for teaching me how to do this. As always, I appreciate you coming on the show. Great to talk to you again. And again, we'll talk again about figs a little later on.
Thanks, Doug. Lots of fun.
All right. Here he is, Doug Oster. But before we get to Doug, let's take the 10th caller, wins that gift certificate from Janoski's, 412-922-1020. And now it's your cue. Ready, set, go. Get on the phone lines. Everything about gardening you need answered. And of course, fall planting tips and tricks and more. 866-391-1020. Doug.
Give me a call. Let's talk gardening. It'll be fun. And while I was in California, I stopped by a store that I was really excited to see. It's called the Petaluma Seed Bank, and it's run by Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds, one of my favorite companies. And it was really cool. First off, they had, I was just always excited to see this, bags and bags of this stuff called pit moss, P-I-T-T-M-O-S-S. They make it in Ambridge. I've been a big fan of what they do. It's peat-free, organic, made from recycled newspapers. I use it for my containers. It uses 2/3 less water. But it was really cool to see it. We just got to the seed store after our visit to the winery. So we're right there when they were closing. I picked up some seeds for planting here for my, when I said, third season in the vegetable garden. And I was asking the woman, I'm like, do you sell a lot of pit moss? She goes, yeah, we've been selling a lot of it, but people have to get used to it. I'm like, I know, it's something different. But
pretty cool. That was exciting. I'm actually going to plant some of those seeds today. Actually, the first thing I got to do right after the show is go to the post office and check my P.O. box, because I know they're going to be mad at me because it's going to be jammed with letters for the potato top tomato. Nurseries are going to have pans. I've seen pansies, flowering kale, mums. These are all things to plant now. Don't stop. Don't stop. Keep planting. And while I was gone, I figured something would get in the garden, but nothing got in the garden. And my wife said she was picking tomatoes, which is nice. The other thing, going back to the sorghums, is I had what they're doing there with hot peppers is amazing. And actually, Randy texted me, I think it was yesterday, Braden is doing the peppers there. And first off, he sent me a picture of his harvest. I'll post it. I'll put it up. I haven't yet. My gosh, it was unbelievable. And I recognized some of the peppers because I bought some there in the spring. Well, I got together with some friends the day before I left for California and had a hot pepper tasting. And I didn't tell them we were going to do it because I knew they would be complaining. But I got there. I brought all the hot peppers from the mildest hot pepper all the way up to one that is chocolate promosole or something like that. That actually, my friend, I took one over to my friend Hot Pepper Dave, and he was definitely affected by it. So we started with actually one from Baker Creek that I grow. It's called, and I got it from Sorghums. It's called Habananda, and it is a habanero that doesn't have heat. And so you say, well, why would you want that? Well, the habanero without heat, the reason we're eating these hot peppers, and I say it all the time, is there is a unique flavor. Sometimes you have to take the pain, but there is just a wonderful, unique flavor. And so we started with habananda, which even though it says it doesn't have any heat, it has a little bit. And then went up to Tabasco pepper, which again is another one I got at Sorghums. Then up to Super Chili, and Super Chili I grew from seed. That's one of my absolute favorites. It puts on thousands of little red peppers, probably 2 inches long and beautiful shiny red. Then another one called the mother of all peppers. It's a native pepper from Texas. That they're like the size of a, I don't know, what would you say, bigger than a BB, but just like that little, like a maybe a peppercorn or a little bigger. And I had a couple of those, and then we moved up to the real the real stuff. Well, actually, no, the other one was, what's it called? Some type of longhorn pepper that, just has the most wonderful flavor and just enough heat to get you going. Well, then we went up to Tim's Yellow Scorpion. If you heard the word scorpion with a pepper, you know it's going to be hot. And so, again, you start at the very end of the pepper where it's the least heat, and then you work your way up to the stem. That's where the most heat is. And once they are ripe, they're hotter too. And then finally that chocolate one. And when I ate that chocolate one... my eyes were watering, but you get over it. It's just a little itty-bitty slice. It's not like you're eating the whole pepper. So we had a ball doing that. When I did come back and I looked at the tomato plants, I still have lots of tomatoes left on there. I've been hearing from people like, when do they ripen? This is the time when you can just basically trim off the tops of the tomatoes. And what we're doing when we do that is the plant... What it wants to do is it wants to grow, it wants to flower, it wants to fruit and put on seeds. That's basically what a tomato is to the plant, is a seed delivery system. To us, it's, you know, the homegrown tomato. And so when you cut off the top, which it keeps, it just right now, they keep making flowers, just saying, okay, well, I'll just keep doing this and making tomatoes. This will go on for who knows how long, and I won't have to worry about making seed. When you remove the tops, and it's not flowering anymore. Now it's like it goes into panic mode. I have to put on my seeds, which means ripen those tomatoes. And so that'll help ripen them. The flavor changes now when we have these cooler nights, but it's still a great, great tomato. I'm still picking, which is great. because it was so dry, my cucumbers are pretty much slowed down. I could really use a day of rain, but it doesn't look like that's in the forecast. That will be another one of my jobs today, is to water containers. I saw a couple hanging baskets. They got, like I said, they got a little bit of rain. They're okay, but we don't want to let things dry out. That's for sure. And when you're thinking about the end of the season here, think about compost. Compost is everything. That's whenever I speak out there and talk about gardening, and when we talk about it here, is compost. And I always do a little thing about how to make compost. The thing about compost is anything that once was living will eventually become compost. And so for many of us, we are saving things that come out of the kitchen. The things we don't save are meat, creamy dairy, and oils, because those can attract rodents. Now, my compost bins are in the woods. I'm throwing everything from the kitchen, everything from the garden left over that's not diseased in there, and just we're making up kind of layers. Every time that I throw it in, I'm putting in some straw. You could use dried shredded leaves. You could use all sorts of other things, shredded newspaper. You're putting green and brown together. The green is the stuff that comes out of the kitchen or the garden. The brown is those carbon-rich things like the leaves or in my case, the straw. And we make these layers. It makes better compost, better quality compost. But if you put piled up shredded leaves, shredded oak leaves, if you just shredded them and kept them in a pile, they would eventually become compost. But that is my building block for the garden. Thinking of next year, that's what I'm going to do. When the time is right, it's still a month away probably, we're going to pull out all those annuals. We're going to pull out all the vegetable plants and the pepper plants that can't take any cold. And we're going to put those in the compost pile, and they were just going to sit there until we get to spring, and they're going to break down, and then we'll have more compost. The thing about compost is it is the best way to recycle, because you get the direct benefit. I always say this. I always say when we're recycling other things, aluminum cans or newspapers or whatever it might be, we're doing it because we think it's the right thing to do. Okay, well, we're going to help the environment. Recycling is a good thing. When we're recycling this stuff out of the kitchen, especially, that stuff used to go to the landfill. Now it goes on site. It stays on site, and it becomes something that we get the direct benefit out of, which is the compost. So anyway, we take out all these things at the end of the season when it gets cold, and the first thing I do is put compost on and then mulch on top of that to hold the compost in place, and it's ready to plant for next year. But half the garden or more will be filled with these cool weather crops. One of the things that I got at that Petaluma seed bank, and I talk about it all the time, it's called tatsoi, T-A-T-S-O-I. And it's this green from the like broccoli family, kale family, but it's a deep green kind of floret of leaves that are very mild but really good for you, but can only grow in cold weather. And so this is just, that's what I'm doing now. I'm choosing these plants that love cold weather and cool temperatures and don't care about a frost, and I'm putting those in now and getting them established. Pretty soon, those peas that I put in August will be flowering, and then we'll have a crop of fall peas, which, again, these are going to be purple peas, and I can't wait for my grandkids to see them and to enjoy them. That's part of gardening, is sharing your stuff. When I had that fig event last week, I took some hot peppers for some of the people that work there at Shenanigans, and they were so excited. I just brought them super chili, that just very easy, 20,000 Scovilles, maybe 40,000 Scovilles, where the super, super hot ones are like 2 million Scovilles. So they were happy to get them. And everybody last week, I had a great crowd there for the event for the fig feast. And we had 300 figs that people enjoyed eating. And boy, did they enjoy eating them and talking about figs. It was just awesome.
All right, we're going to get a break in. If you have a question for Doug, now would be a great time to call, 866-391-1020. All right, got some calls for Doug here in the final segment of The Organic Gardener. Here's Cheryl up on Mount Washington on KDKA. Good morning, Cheryl. How are you?
Great. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask Doug, I have a rototiller and I'm trying to start a new patch, but how to go in the shop, I'm not sure. It's repairable. So I was thinking about doing a raised bed, but what? Where can I buy one? And I know there's certain products it should be made out of so it can be safe, you know, to plant.
So actually, I don't know if you do this or online, but I've seen a lot of them on Facebook Marketplace actually for free where people are just giving them away. Oh. But online, there's a ton of different types of raised beds. There's also, you could go to like a tractor supply type of store, and they have these big galvanized horse, like what a mm-hmm. horse trough. People use those. Mm-hmm. You drill some holes in the bottom. You know, those ones are like $100, but you can get cheaper ones. And yeah, you just don't want, the only thing you don't really want is treated wood. That's the thing you wouldn't want if you were growing food crops. Anything else is fine, and usually they're just made out of metal. And then it's what you're going to fill it up with is the question, and how you're going to get the stuff in there. Once the raised bed is filled up, it's great. But like that big giant horse trough, that's a lot of compost, and that's what we would use. We would get compost. I guess you could do it by the bag, but that would probably be kind of expensive. I'd prefer, if I was doing a new raised bed, is to just get somebody to deliver, you know, like a pickup truck full, or borrow somebody that has a pickup truck and have them fill up their truck and bring it to your place. And that would work out great. That's a great way to have kind of an instant garden. And there's nothing wrong with rototilling and then adding the compost then. But like you said, if the rototiller is not going to be able to be fixed, a raised bed is a great way to go. Does that help?
Yes, and where would I get the compost, Doug? I mean, my compost bins went too at the same time, so I'm relocating my garden to a new patch. That's why I would only rototill, because I normally don't do that. I just keep layer on top of layer.
Yeah, well, I like that too, that layering thing. Well, for Mount Washington, we just need to find a place that would deliver up there, and there's probably a nursery that would come up there. We just have to figure out who it would be, but poke around a little bit. You'll be able to find somebody, and then keep me posted on what you do. I hope you get that going this fall, because you could throw in some cool weather crops and you'd be good.
All right, here is Carol in Butler, last call of the day. Carol, go ahead. You're on the air with Doug.
Hi, good morning, guys. Question for you. I have beans, pole beans, that I want to save for next year to plant. How do I do that?
Perfect timing. That was on my list of things to talk about, saving seeds. So you must be reading my mind. From all the way up in Butler, you're reading my mind. So beans are one of the easiest things to save seeds from. Whenever you're saving seeds from anything, there's two big families of plants. One is called hybrid, the other one is called open pollinated. In the case of a bean, they're almost all open pollinated, nothing to worry about. The only thing about the hybrid is that would be something like a hybrid tomato. It wouldn't be the same thing the next year. Your beans will be fine. And so for the beans, all we're doing is we're letting them stay on the plant for as long as possible. They'll get big and they'll push out and get dry, and and anything we're saving seeds from, we're trying to swoop in just before the plant would deliver its seeds. And so in the case of a bean, what it's going to do, it's going to grow, you know, it's going to swell up, and then that pod is going to dry out, and then you can just kind of split them apart. The most important thing when saving seeds is that they remain dry. Okay, so you could pull the pods off if you want when they're completely dry, and you can wait, you know, for another month until this happens. I've left some beans on my pole beans that have started to swell and they've started to dry, and I know I'll have some for next year's crop. Put them in a some kind of paper envelope or some kind of envelope, and then store them in like a mason jar or baby food jar, something that, that is airtight. And what I'm also doing is I'm putting in some of that, like a packet of silica gel to keep them dry. That dry is the important thing. And now you'll have bean seeds for next year. And believe it or not, the seeds that you're saving will have a germination rate up into the 90s. So let me know how that goes. That is awesome. Now, remember, organic gardeners, you make our world brighter and safer with each seed you sow and every garden you grow.
So where would you go fishing if you were in California?
You know, I don't know, but I'm going back out there, I think, in January. We're going to figure out a place. There is a lot of fishing out there. So I'm going back in January, I think, and I'll find a spot to fish. I don't know if it'd be the ocean, or I know they have a lot of freshwater lakes, but we'll figure it out. Get a guide to take us around, catch some big, giant California bass. It'd be fun.
Nice. All right, stay tuned. News coming up next, then the Coons Cooking Hour on KDKA.